Hello, Fiona Ritchie with you as we make a return trip to Traditional Song Week at the Swannanoa Gathering in the heart of North Carolina's beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains. This time we meet up with Dahi Spruill. Welcome to the Thistle and Shamrock. Welcome to Traditional Song Week here at the Swannanoa Gathering and one of our now continuing series of visits with some of the artists who are visiting here. Maybe some of you remember last year we had Jean Ritchie and she was an honoured guest of the gathering, and we had a wonderful chance to spend time with Jean in this kind of situation, which is different from a concert and it's different from maybe a class or a session or even a chat over lunch with them, because you were exploring ideas, we're bringing you into the question side, and we're getting a bit of a musical illustration in a stream of semi-consciousness. So as well as welcoming you here to Traditional Song Week at the Swannanoa Gathering here at Warren Wilson College, I wanted to welcome Dahi Spruill, who's a friend of the gathering and well known to most of you, I'm sure. Dahi is originally from Derry, but he's lived in the United States for 30 years now in Minnesota. So we'll be exploring a little bit about his roots and his, you know, long time spent over here. Many of you probably know him through his work with Alton, but Dahi has played with many, many musicians in lots of different types of configurations instrumentally, as well as being a singer of Irish and English songs. Dahi, lovely to have you up
Great
here.
Great to be here, an honour, honour, yes. And a pleasure.
We first became aware of you in a recorded sense with Scarabrae, which you made with Micheál O'Donnell.
Yes.
And Trina and Marit Nichonel. You were all just wee girls and boys back then.
We were very young. They were even younger than I was. Yes,
how
I
old
think Marid was only Marid was only 14, I think, when we did that. So I met them in a place called Ranafast in Donegal, in the west of Donegal. And I went there when I was 14. It was sort of like an American summer camp situation where you're going, not that I've ever been to an American summer camp. But
this is an American summer camp.
This is it, but you know what I mean, like where children are sent off. So sort of 3.5 weeks and you're staying with the local people in an Irish-speaking area, which we call a Gaeltacht. And you're staying in the houses of the local people. So there might be anything from 15 to 35 little boys or little girls piled into these cottages. And you were forbidden to speak any English. And I was a pretty, this is my first time away from home, and I was extremely introverted, a bookish little character. So it was quite traumatic. But out of it came all sorts of wonderful things. And one of the things that came out of it was meeting this family, the O'Donnells. And their father was from Ranafast and had been, he was a singer and a collector himself. Hughie, he was known as Hughie, Vicky Hughie, Hughie son of Mickey, son of Hughie. And he came from a very musical family. And then the mother was from Kells, County Meath. So that's actually where they lived. But every summer they would go off to Donegal, and that's where I met them. Well, I was learning all these wonderful songs in Irish, but it also happened to be where I started playing the guitar. But it was all excruciating for me, as I say, because I was so so inhibited. But it was one of those things where you have a form of torture, and then you come home. I was back in Derry, and I was thinking, oh, you know, that was pretty good. So then I went every year after that, and I bonded with all these people and got very tied up both with the songs in Irish and with the language. You know, I really got into my bones, as it were.
Right. So it really changed you. It was a life-changing.
Definitely. Yeah.
And the connection then with the O'Donnells, how did the coming together to actually record an album happen?
Well, what happened was in 66, I really got to know them. And I kind of hit it off with Micheál. In 67, one of the guys in the house was a friend of mine from Derry, and he had a guitar. And I'd already worked out chords by ear on the piano. Like, I never had any lessons. So I knew what all the chords to all the Beatles songs and all the ballads of the day were. And all I had to do was somebody, where do I put my fingers? So I was sort of instant. It was like, add water. You empty the stuff out of the powder, out of the packet, and add water. I was instantly playing the guitar. And we actually played in a concert the week after I put my hands on the guitar with my friend. Just bashing, you know. So we didn't really keep in contact that year, but when we came back, Micheál told me he'd been waiting to see what I would have done with the guitar in the interim, you know. Actually, I suppose it was 68 when I came back after having had
a year. Was he already accomplished guitar?
He already played, and he was a great pianist. You know, Micheál was actually a trained pianist, and he did all his qualifiers for, you know, all the grades, and he could have gone on and been a piano teacher. But it didn't have a magic for him. And in fact, it didn't translate. You know, he was doing it in this, you know, beautifully, but mechanically. It just didn't catch his imagination, whereas the guitar did and the songs did. And then we kind of sparked each other off, because he already could play the guitar and he had a lot of great musical background, whereas I was coming from another angle, from the Beatles, the chording system of the Beatles, and starting the guitar, you know, by trial and error. And when we put it all together, we were instantly arranging the songs in Irish that we had been singing in the classes and so on, and also doing Beatles songs and blues and everything. We did everything. And of course, any musician can have a whole Beatles interview if you like, you know. But just hearing their harmonies and their interesting chords put you in an amazing position then when you started applying this to this unaccompanied music.
Thank you.
I remember starting arranging. I could even tell you what the song was. It was a song called Phil, Phil, Runo. And my father overheard it in the house. And of course, like all parents, about 64, he wasn't exactly a Beatles fan. But he overheard and he says, is that a Beatles song you're doing? And it was a traditional song, which I was singing as traditionally as I could. But the only difference was we now had these, had chords.
Can we hear that?
Yeah, I can show you. But,
Fell, fell, darun o, fell, darun o, es na hemi wen. Fell, darun, ba, chashlis is to. Agus chifi tu, an lor, mail in tu.
Something like that.
So he just heard something about the feel of that to him sounded like Beatles arrangement.
Yeah. And I would have sort of agreed, you know, like we all have, you know, say in this room now as we talk, there are people of different ages and different experiences. But my feeling about popular music as I experienced it, say, when I was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, was that there was there may have been wonderful things going on. What I heard was I thought it was dreadful, you know, even as a little semi-toddler. And it seemed to be nothing interesting musically going on. And it was, I think a lot of people were captured by the whole Beatles era by some cool factor or hip or sexy or something. But me and my friends, it really was the music. So then we heard Pentangle, 67, 68, the wonderful, I suppose, British, English and Scottish band. And the guitar sounds were so sophisticated. And, of course, they were drawing on blues and medieval music and everything and putting it into traditional music. But so we were blown away by them completely. And we just saw the tunings at the end, you know, written out on the album sleeve. And one of the tunings was Dadgad. And I just tuned my guitar to Dadgad. And instantly I thought, well, this sounds interesting.
Is your guitar in Dadgad?
It's in Dadgad now,
yeah. For people listening who don't see your guitar, but will appreciate it has six strings.
Yes.
Can you translate a little bit about how Dadgad applies and why? What's the different quality of that tuning?
Well, the way it's tuned is from the highest string, you tune down the first two strings, two semitones, and then the sixth string, two semitones. So, you know, the standard tuning is set up so that you can conveniently play all these different keys and have a full chord while you're doing it, pretty simply with a few fingers down in the first few frets. So the difference, guitar tuning you use, the first usefulness of it is that it gives you a nice sound with very little effort. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so you might have a song and it's just D, G, and A, and this doesn't sound very interesting. So you might tune it to any tuning, and all of a sudden you might have a nice sound, you know, or an interesting, intriguing sound. So this is I'm playing a series of one finger chords here. You know, so
a lot of the work's already been done by the tuning.
It's all there, yeah. You know, there's a nice sound. And then from my point of view, I like to ornament a lot. And so it's easy to have, you know, harmonies and basses and little running patterns while the open drony strings are supporting you. Mm-hmm. To do the same in standard tuning, it's actually almost impossible. But if you were doing something similar, it requires a lot of effort. Yes, it's a very, you can have it really, really simple and it sounds nice. And then you can have it as complicated as you want. But it does sort of complement the nature of Irish tunes because of, I tend not to use full chords. And Irish music has been developed in a situation where you had no chord instrument, you had no harmony, you had no accompaniment, really. And I think Irish music is kind of happy not to be in a straitjacket, if I may personify it.
You mentioned listening to Pentangle back then and with the great guitarist John Renburn and Bert Jansch.
Yeah, but I did try and make up little simple tunes, and some of them were just really imitative of Jansch and Renburn. Like, I had this little one that we recorded with Scarabray. Or something like it. I'd hardly ever play this thing, but this is really simple.
So
something like that.
The muscle memory came back.
Yes, it was beginning to come back. I just needed it. But yeah, I did try and mimic things and make up little tunes. But in recent years, I've done a lot more of instrumental stuff.
And
but
composing tunes as well.
Composing a lot of tunes, yeah. And I like to, you know, get a... I suppose we all have that creative side. I want... Sometimes I'd make up melodies to words that were already there and stuff like that. But Michal would have been much quicker to be able to do something complicated than I would.
Yeah, an amazing fellow all round.
Yeah.
Great guy. You moved to the States 30 years ago.
Yep.
You sound like you just come off the boat.
Yes, I have a very bad ear for accents. I can't even put on an accent. It's funny to me because I lived for 10 years in Dublin before I came to America, and even in Dublin people were saying, it's really weird you'd be living in Dublin for 10 years and you haven't succeeded.
You would have heard, you know, all kinds of music, obviously, growing up through the radio and whatnot, but was there any type of music that you first heard when you came to Minnesota that, you know, you thought, oh, I've never heard that before, that's new to me?
You've stumped me now. Had you
heard old-time music before?
I'd heard little snippets of old-time music. I did begin to hear more of it in the States, and I felt, even though I don't play it, I felt completely at home listening to it. I'm very interested in listening to old-time music, song and tunes, and trying to, without going and researching it, wondering where it really comes from. But one song I found in Wisconsin, in a book, more accurately, in a book of songs collected in Wisconsin, that I really, really love. And it's a version of The Sailor Boy, which is very well known over in Ireland and all the English-speaking world. And it's sort of, it's kind of mixed up in my head with another great song called The Crappy Boy, which is related to Lord Franklin, all those things. So it's all, afraid that's another reason why it's kind of a mishmash in my head.
Let's hear
but this
what
is,
you've
here's
discovered.
The Pinery Boy. And what's interesting about this to me, apart from, it's just a classic version of the song, but it has... It's been localized, you know, so it has the Wisconsin River and the Wisconsin Dells mentioned in it. But the melody could be Irish. It's, you know, that doesn't make it any better, but it's amazingly compatible with Irish aesthetic. And with the wonders of the web in the last couple of years, I actually heard a recording of the woman that they got the song from. And she was playing the melody on the cello, which is odd. But it really sounded, and I'd got it from the notes in the page, which is a struggle for me, and I don't do it very much. And I felt the feel of the way she played it was sort of the way I was singing it. Anyhow, so I'll sing you a bit of it, or I might sing the whole of it, maybe. I don't know. Man's life is a wearisome one. It causes many fair maids to weep and mourn. It causes them to weep and mourn for the memory of a loved one that never can return. Oh father, go build me a boat that down the Wisconsin I may float. And every raft that we pass by, 'tis there I will inquire for my sweet Pinery Boy. As she was going down the stream, she spied three boats all in a string. She hailed the pilot as they drew nigh, and there she did inquire for her sweet Pinery Boy. Oh pilot, oh tell me true, is my sweet Willie on board with you? Oh tell me quick and give me joy, for none other will I have but my sweet Pinery Boy. Well, auburn was the color of his hair, his eyes were blue and his cheeks were fair, his lips were of a ruby fine, 500 times they have met with mine.
drowned in the dells, I fear. Was that lone rock that we passed by? 'Tis there that we left your sweet Piney boy. So she wrung her hands and she tore her hair, just like a lady in great despair. She rowed her boat against Lone Rock. You'd have thought this fair lady's heart was broke. Well, build my grave, bows wide and deep. Place a marble slab at my head and feet. And in the middle, a turtle dove, that the world may know that I died for love. And at my head, a spreading oak, that the world may know that my heart.
All of it.
He's one of the architects of today's Irish music sound as a guitar accompanist, traditional singer, member of Alton and the influential group of teenagers that was Scara Brae. Dathi Sproule is our guest at the Swannanoa Gathering. Check our website soon for a playlist and a chance to listen again to this programme before long. That's all online at thistleradio.com. But stay with me here on the radio now for more with Dathi Sproule. This is NPR. Fiona Ritchie with you still, and here's our guest Dathi Sproule as part of Trian. Thank you. You sing in English and in Irish, different song repertoire, obviously, but how do you approach a song when you're singing it in English as opposed to when you're singing it in Irish? Is it a different kind of emotional feel? Or
once you know the Irish language, you really savour the words. The words are not just the meaning of the words, but the feel and the sound of the words is incredibly important. Now, obviously, that has to be important in songs in English, but I think it's even more so in Irish. And it reminds me of a thing. I have this friend who's a poet, Barton Sutter is his name. It's wonderful. Minnesota writer and poet. And I only know poetry apart from the poetry of songs. I only know it from the few poems you'd study at school. So it was a bit like with the old time people when I know nothing about it and I'm curious, you know. So we were talking about poetry one time and I was saying, you know, you're reading a poem and a lot of the time you don't understand what it's about. And is this a huge problem, in other words? And he was saying, no, you've got to remember that the poem is a physical thing as well. It's an object. And even without knowing, analysing anything, the sound itself is the poem. Do you follow what I mean? So it's definitely true in the Irish language. So the poetry, the sound, the metre of the poems is at such a high level, you know, even compared to anything almost you'd get in English. So I'll give you a concrete example. Sometimes you're listening to a song in Irish, and even if you don't know Irish, you may feel there's some musical beauty here, but you don't know what it is. So there's a type of metre that's very, very common in Irish songs in Irish, which is based on patterns of assonance. Now, assonance is the vowel sound. So rather than an end rhyme, it's the vowel sound. So if you take, there's a gorgeous song that I've always loved. I'll sing you a bit of this song. And it was written by a poet called Padraig O'Durnian. So the poetry in Irish and song is the same thing. You don't have poetry over here and song over here. It was the one thing, a poem is a song is a poem is a song. So this is by a famous poet, Padraig O'Durnian, but it's a song. A flor na mwejan nes o da gre ha ha clu lesh gev on na chlen a chul na berli a run da hegse ubles fel des falche a rush marjrein et us gafle yel a wuk es lin le gaede she mohru aigan me stu a hiur lin hin en sadun shen hin vekhante. So it's a gorgeous melody, and he's trying to ask this young woman to go off with him up into this hill in the middle of the night, this fairy hill, and it's just beautifully put and so on. But as well as saying something beautiful, there's end rhyme all the way through it, and other rhymes as well internally. But in every single line of that main line of that verse that I sung, the pattern of vowels was the same. It was oo, a of the stressed vowels. A flúr na mwéjan, ue, is ude gre, ue, ue, through the whole thing. There's a pattern of vowels. And there's then five or six verses of this. And then he's saying something beautiful and meaningful. And then it's to a great melody. Well, so there is literally, in a sense, more musicality.
Now that may explain why people respond so well to hearing it when they know nothing of what the words mean, because it is beautiful to listen to, and it sort of speaks to us kind of on that emotional and musical level without us really being able to unpick why.
Definitely. And the people who are singing it, the students, like people who go to school and learn about Irish, might be told a bit about this. But I suspect, maybe promptly forget it, but I suspect that if it was a room of Irish traditional singers, very few of them would be consciously aware of this at all,
right.
Even the people who are singing it now. Huh. So it's great. It's, you know, I mean, so you've that thing of the Irish songs and Irish being musical is almost literally true.
And it's a feel as much as anything.
Yes, it's the beauty of the sound. I'm doing a song class here of songs in Irish, and obviously the people don't know Irish, and I was talking to them about certain words that just sound so beautiful to me. Just the And you almost, but that will happen in a song in English as well, mm-hmm. Where you, so on the edge of your consciousness, there's some line you just love singing mm-hmm. because you love saying those words, you know. But that's a lot of what the Irish stuff is.
Do you feel different when you're singing an Irish song compared to singing an English song?
I don't think so. I'm not aware of it, but I do feel, you always feel some echo of where you got the music from. This is, of course, the basis of this whole tradition, that you're so aware of the past. And if I, the older I get, the more I'm hearing the sounds of the Ranafast singers when I sing in Irish. Even though I'm not loyally reduplicating anything about what they did consciously, or I wouldn't, I've never tried really. But I hear it, I feel it, their sound. And I get more and more pleasure from that as I get older.
Chicken Gavro G and Do Garol and Yeda Acherwella Bridge Gardo.
What sorts of English songs do you most enjoy singing?
I'm a romantic, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well spotted. We're talking about mostly words here, but I love melodies. You know, I'm really into melody almost more than words. So when I can find beautiful words as well, I'm delighted, but it's almost optional. So, and of course, most of the songs I sing are sad, in a sense, but I don't feel it as sorrow. I feel it as love. You know, I think they're about love and sorrow, but the feeling I have is actually love. And so that's really what it's about, in a sense, for me. But then there are, of course, these songs that have just fabulous words. And one of them is one I associate with Julian Mark here.
What's that?
And it's what, can I sing it?
Yes, please do.
Fun. And because this is an American song, actually. I don't know if we have found a traditional Irish or English version of this song. It's The Blackest Crow. And, of course, I do this a version of it with Julie and Mark, but it's called My Dearest Dear, and the words, this is, I've heard many versions of the words that are all wonderful, but the melody was composed by Terry Woods, who is an Irish musician who was a member of Sweeney's Men, and then he was a member of the Pogues, he may still be, and he was a founder member of Steel Ice Band, very interesting guy. But this is a song I just love, and the words are, I suppose they are romantic, yes. They're wonderful. My dearest dear, the time has come for you and I to part, and you will never know, my dear, the sorrow in my heart, and you will never know, my dear, I love you
so well. I love you more, my dearest dear, than human tongue can tell. The crow that is so black, my dear, would surely turn to white. If ever I prove false to you, bright day would turn to night. Bright day would turn to night, my dear. The elements will mourn. If ever I prove false to you, the seas will rage and burn. I wish my heart was made of glass, wherein you might behold the letters of your name, my dear. Therein are writ with gold. Therein are writ with gold, my dear. Believe me when I say you are the only one for me until my dying day. So when you're in some foreign land, pray think on your absent friend. And when the wind blows high and clear, a letter to me send. And when the wind blows high and clear, pray send it, love, to me, that I may know by your handwrite how times have gone with thee. My dearest dear, the time has come for you and I to part. And you will never know, my dear, I love you oh so well. I love you more, my dearest dear, than human tongue can tell.
It's a killer.
The blackest crow.
I call it my dearest dear because mm-hmm. that was that version. But it seems to be like a magnet for uh-huh. a lot of the most beautiful little gems from, you know, that can move from song to song.
That's an interesting concept, actually. The idea that a song would become a gathering point for other bits of songs and singers to treat. You know, that it would become a sort of a focal point for the tradition. There probably are a few stellar songs that have that. Have that identity and have that drawing power.
I think there is, and yet somehow they have some sort of identity of their own. And then you have another, on the other hand, you have a song that just seems to be like a, keep its structure really solid for, like Barbara Allen, for hundreds and hundreds of years, there it is. You know, I mean, I know verses come and go from that, but it's so, it's such a sturdy song, amazing.
Speaking of drawing power, one of your hats that you wear is with one of the great draws of Irish music, which is the band Alton, and you've been working with them for quite a number of years now. When they come over to the States, you get with the band, and that must have been a great experience, working with these fabulous musicians and touring. And
all these things start off from a friendship, or you meet somebody, and Frank and Reid, of course, who started the band, were very wonderful. I mean, Frankie passed away, but wonderful, wonderful people, very charismatic, and the kind of people who come into a room and would almost literally make the room light up. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody felt good to see them, and everybody felt like a better person for having met them. You know, like they had that lovely positive effect, and so I suppose we all liked them and enjoyed their company, and Frankie was an incredibly funny person. I spent years just laughing, which I realise I don't do as much of with Frankie gone, but it was incredibly funny, and they had very powerful music. So that was really where the start as a friendship for me, just fiddle and flute, and her Mairead singing unaccompanied. It was, they sounded like 50 people. You know, I almost was telling him, you don't need to start a band. Why do you need a band for? It's fantastic, you know. But then, of course, they did do the band, and I've been playing with them so for more than 20 years. And, you know, a great friendship. They're wonderful people, great music, and like a very successful kind of marriage or something. You know, they are, everybody treats themselves with such, each other with such respect. It's very important. And we've gone all over the world. You know, I've played with them all over the world. And again, fate intervened and took me to the scruff of the neck, and I'm delighted.
So wearing a lick to an anime, so wearing in your nahily, so wearing a lick to an anime, so wearing in your nahily. Pina Hamara Hakumai, Pina Hamara Hakumai, Pina Hamara Hakumai, the white to waste the way my own, so wearing a lick to an anime. So are you
playing with Alton has been wonderful, and I mean, it's a complete pleasure, and every night I enjoy playing. which is great. You know, if we've done a thing 100 times, I still enjoy it. Because everybody puts their heart into it. But it's like a craft. You have a slot. I mean, once you come to four, it's like you're a team member. And you have a slot, and you get more and more and more into filling that slot as perfectly as you can. So it's very craftsmanlike to me. Whereas if I'm playing in a duet or a trio, I can just play whatever I want, basically. And so when I got to play with Liz Carroll and Billy McComiskey and Treen, and those are the any albums that I played on, you know, played a lot on as opposed to maybe guesting, those are the ones that I love listening to. I mean, I just think it's fabulous music. You know, in other words, I've had the opportunity to go back to that music a lot over the years at home, and it's fantastic. I mean, and two wonderful people. So that's the beauty of being an accompanist too. You've got a mobility. You know, if you're lucky, nice people will be phoning you up and asking you to play with them. So you get to play. I've played with so many. You know, they all have their own character. And I can try and do my own thing, but with a different feel, different rhythm. A lot of the time I find it excruciating listening to anything I'm on, because all I'm hearing is the flaws. But for some reason I like the tunes, and I can just listen to them with some pleasure. Anyhow, this is The Crow in the Sun. And I recorded this with Liz Carroll one time. Another crow.
Another crow, yes. Well, I just want to ask you to join me in thanking Dahi Sproul for taking this time to give us these insights and just to let us walk a little bit in through his life and music and share spontaneously some of those tunes and songs he carried around with him. So let's have another round of applause for Dahi Sproul.
Dahi Sproul joined us at the Swannanoa Gathering during Traditional Song Week. Thanks to Al Pettaway for the great job he did recording our session. Also to Jim and Beth McGill, Doug and Darcy Orr, Julie Glaub-Weems, and all at the Swannanoa Gathering at Warren Wilson College, North Carolina, where I'm sure we'll all meet up again.